Welcome, welcome to the RC Report. I am your host, RC Carlton. I always forget to say this, so before we get started with Actively Lazy, who's our guest, or IBS Jesus, I'm going to call him on this particular day, I want you to remember to please rate, subscribe, and write a review if you'd be so kind to help spread the word. We're one of your only sources of entertainment during this mess. Actively Lazy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, baby, with the 1999 flip phone for my job. I just got a text from one of my kids, so we're averting a crisis. But I'm here, baby, I'm here. I've never been a guest on the RC Report. I don't know why. I feel like I've been, it's always your brother or Joe, but it's not me.
I'm slumming it now, man. Desperate times. No, we just usually do special stuff. Like, we'll do, like, a draft thing, or we do special events. But I figured, like, you could be my cousin Sal. That kind of works in a lot of different ways to think about it. But
I feel like I'm being used for real.
He also likes gambling. He's gambling. He's a little chubby. And he's very funny. Like, So I wanted to talk about a lot of things to talk about. I know you want to talk about Trump and his little Get Back to America committee with Vince McMahon. But before we do that, I want to talk about this much ballyhooed, anticipated Last Dance, I think they're calling it, documentary, 10 parts, which is a long time. I think only the OJ documentary was only 6, and that was critically acclaimed. But 10 parts is a long time. But why do you think this is getting so much just hype? I guess because there's nothing else, I suppose.
I mean, it's part of there's nothing else, and then it's also part of, I think there's a lot of the younger generation, YouTube era, Instagram, Snapchat people, they don't really know Michael Jordan, man. They don't really know the Chicago Bulls. They don't really know anything about 90s basketball or the drama that was 90s basketball. And I think given that this is going to be more behind the scenes, I think a lot of people are excited to kind of see like what they would view as a raw representation of the Chicago Bull dynasty.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people miss on some of the documentaries and some of the events that happened back then. Like, I don't think they're going to tell me a whole lot that I didn't know from. They did a Sports Century thing in the year 2000 where Michael Jordan was number one, and they talked about Michael Jordan's dark side. If you're actually a reader, ESPN did an article where Michael Jordan walked in his friend's closet and took a knife to any shoe that wasn't Nike. That's what Michael Jordan was at 50 years old. So if you haven't figured out, then the Hall of Fame speech is the first time somebody had a clue. If you do any reading or any kind of insider looking or listening or reading, you know that Michael Jordan was an asshole. But I do think for a lot of the millennials or whatever, Gen Z, Gen Y, they might be surprised. Hopefully we can put to bed this Jordan versus LeBron debate, because you can kind of see it in contemporary fashion. I don't even like to get in it, but like, if you when you watch this and you see how driven this man was to win, he just can't touch him. But I Michael Jordan already has apologized and said people are going to think he's a jerk. Everybody should have known anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's older now. He ain't got the same drive competitively on the court anymore. So, I mean, I guess he cares more about his image now than he would have back then. I really think, you know, obviously in his playing days, to me, he would have been a lot like Kobe. Like, I don't care if you like me or not, long as we win. And I think that's what I'm going to see. That's what I anticipate seeing. And honestly, there's nothing that could happen that would make me change my opinion on how I feel about Michael Jordan as a player. I don't really care. I mean, these are alpha male, top of the echelon athletes. I've said this before in the sports group and in person. Like, you talking about the Mayweather, the Tiger Woods, the Alis, the Jordans, the anybody that you can think of that is at the apex of their professional sport, they're going to be an asshole. It's just what it is.
Generally speaking, yeah. generally speaking, yeah, and that's just not – that's just – and LeBron is whatever he is, but he just has a different way of being it. He's very passive-aggressive in the way he does it.
I think
but that doesn't make it necessarily better.
Yeah, I think he's more of a business version of Jordan. Like, I feel like we've seen LeBron basically get coaches pushed out, get players pushed out if they don't comply to what he wants and in regards of what he likes on the court or what people do off the court. I'm still surprised that Kuzma is still a part of the Lakers organization. I really thought they was going to ship him out after all the stuff that went down with them too. Earlier in the year, but again, if LeBron wants it, he gets it, and I mean, it's the same thing. It's just he's not going to ride people like the practices. I really think these practices, the imagery of Jordan at practice is really going to change a lot of people's perspective. But I mean, we people like you and I, the ones who really understand these type of athletes, like casual fans should be a little like, wow, but I really think people who are diehard or who grew up in the 90s, they shouldn't be that surprised. If you grew up watching Kobe from the time he started to the time he retired, you should not be surprised by anything you see from Michael Jordan because he's just as much of a dog. So,
what did you think of the of Shaq weighing in and saying his team could have beat the Bulls and their pride, which I think is really funny before you say that.
I mean,
I think it's really funny that he thinks that Luke Longley and Bill Winnington would be guarding him. Did he forget about Dennis Rodman?
Yeah, so here's my thing with Shaq. Shaq thinks that his dream team version could be Jordan's dream team version. And Shaq has always had an issue with Jordan and the Bulls, obviously from his Penny Hardaway, Orlando Magic days. Which is understandable, and that team did give the Bulls fits. So I would anticipate that a Lakers team with Kobe and Shaq would probably do just as well. I like those Laker teams. My question would be, does Phil coach the Bulls or does Phil coach the Lakers? That would be the real question. And then, two, honestly, Shaq's the type of guy that no matter what you say, he's never going to give you real props. He's never going to be impressed. He's always going to try to one-up you. It is what it is, so I'm not surprised by it. I think he has a valid case, a valid argument. It's not as crazy as when he, in my mind, said that the Dream Team 2 or whatever team he was on could beat the Dream Team that Jordan was on.
Yeah, I think – I really don't think – now, if people don't remember, but they did – Orlando did get Horace Grant. But that's the year that mm-hmm. Jordan came back and played 18 games, and they beat him 4-2, I think. But then the next year, when Jordan had a whole offseason to train, the Bulls, I don't know if they swept him or they beat him in 5, but they beat him pretty convincingly. And then Jordan went on this great run, and Shaq didn't do anything in Orlando. He left, and he didn't do anything in the Lakers until Jordan retired and Shaq got Phil, and even with Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it. And I guess you would have to be like a NBA 2K thing where, like, old Phil Jackson is coaching at the same time against young Phil Jackson.
Young
I mean,
Phil
I guess
Jackson.
if we can time travel, we can split Phil Jackson in half. so I guess that's, like, okay. But I think the Bulls would have a decided advantage. I think Pippen would be able to at least make Kobe work and shoot some low percentage shots.
Yeah.
And Jordan, you know, Kobe can't stop Jordan. And Jordan can hinder Kobe. I just think there'd be an advantage. I think the biggest advantage is inside. But I think with Rodman and just the pedigree of that team, I think it's a really tough road to hoe for that for that Lakers team.
Yeah, and then, too, another thing is that, Kobe, like, that version of Kobe, I'm assuming it's the number 8 Kobe, he wasn't quite there as far as leadership goes. And if the game
definitely
goes a
not.
Certain way, he's going to force it. You got to think that they can throw Jordan and Pippen at Kobe, which I don't care who you are. Having two guys like that guard you throughout the game is going to get tiring. He's going to have to get it down to Shaq, who Rodman's going to be probably on him, getting physical as much as he can, but also annoying him. You got to think they probably put him at the foul line. And then the supporting cast of the Lakers, like, where do they fit in? Like, I don't envision them really contributing a whole lot. I don't really see how this plays out in Shaq's mind in regards of how confident he was when he said that they could beat them. It just seemed a little too confident to me. I'm like, hold on now. I mean, you got a case, but if we really sat down and tried to break it down piece by piece, I think that Bulls team was a little bit stronger of a unit than that version of the Lakers.
I definitely agree. And then, you just look at the team factors, and defensively, I think they were more consistent. There was a year the Lakers were like barely like – the Lakers are like one of the outliers of not being a top 10 defense and still winning the NBA championship. I don't know if that was the second or the third year, but they definitely did that. And then you have Shaq, who was playing himself into shape, and they did have a very dominant season where they only lost one to that Iverson team. But I just think maybe they can take them seven, but I know what I saw. I preferred the Lakers because I never liked the Bulls, but I know what I saw, and that was a bad bunch of bad dudes on the Bulls.
Yeah, I agree.
And so let's get to your issue. Donald Trump announced his stimulate the economy, send America back to work team. That includes Dana White and Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Dude, I'm sorry. I'm trying not, like, I'm not making this political at all. So when I give my opinion, I'm not saying this because I'm liberal or I'm conservative. No, I'm as moderate as you can come. And honestly, I don't care about the politics. I just care about the fact that you got a committee talking about reviving the industry or stimulating the economy that consists of Vince McMahon and Dana White and Roger Goodell. What do they contribute? Like, Vince McMahon just filed for bankruptcy from the XFL.
XFL.
He just got put as an essential – I guess they're considered essential employees in Florida. WWE employees are considered essential employees. And if I'm recalling the timeline correctly – yeah, I was going to say, if I'm recalling the timeline correctly, once he became essential, he then fired people and cut costs so he could still make more money. Like, I don't like Dana White and Vince McMahon on anything dealing with economics or anything dealing with the welfare of other people. I think they're sleazeballs. It's just part of their profession, and they're really good at what they do. But as promoters, you can't trust those guys, yo. I will trust a car salesman before I trust a promoter. Like, seriously. Like, they're not good people. And that's just the name of the game. That's just who they are. They're not good people. And then we got guys like Jerry Jones, Bob Kraft, Mark Cuban, Rob Manfred, Adam Silver, Roger Goodell. Like, what are we doing? This, I mean, just say it's for sports. Like, don't make it seem like you're really doing something for the economy. Like, none of these people have any real background in dealing with economics. I mean, they're good business people, I guess. I mean, they run the organizations and stuff like that, and they've obviously had to have some experience to get to a position where they run the leagues. But let's be real, like, if we're really trying to do something with the economy, I mean, the only one I really could think of off the top of my head when I look at this list that seems like they're smart enough to be able to talk about something like this is Mark Cuban, because he's just a nerd. But the rest of these people, I'm like, dude, Rob Manfred don't talk. I know that for a fact. He don't talk. He's not very vocal. Roger Goodell is a yes man. Adam Silver is very intelligent, but Adam Silver is going to do what's right for everyone. He's going to try to please the entire room. Like, this doesn't seem like the type of committee that's going to really have much of a backbone. Imagine if Jerry Jones, Dana White, Vince McMahon, and Donald Trump team up. They're going to run this room. nobody will stop them.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, they say there's like 200 people on it, so maybe there'll be like a sports section and a lot of like, I don't know, man, and break it up into different kind of businesses. But he has pushed the sports angle on this so hard. And I think it's obviously because he's trying to curry a favor for the voters. And honestly, he might miss sports too. But he knows that's like the most popular thing that's gone is sports. So if you push this and get sports out there, and then even if you are a good leader, without being too political, even if you are a good leader, which I don't think he is, but if you are a good leader, you say, hey, sports, America loves sports, and we're getting back in business, and sports starting would be a sign that everything's back to normal. That's legitimate, I think.
Yeah, and during, if we look through the course of American history, during any time that was trying, whether it be 9/11, world wars, things like that, sports continued for the most part. I think they were still playing baseball during like the world wars. I know they played baseball and football after 9/11. People, you know, it takes people's mind off of stuff. I get all that. But I swear, come November, if he's campaigning as the guy who brought sports back when everyone said Corona, I'm gonna be hot, man. Although it does help me too for my little side hustle and gambling. Yeah, I was gonna say it would be great to see it come back, but I don't want my sports getting political. I guess I've earned that right to say that now. So I don't want my sports getting political in this sense either. Now I understand where the anti-Kaepernick people were coming from. Like, keep it out. keep it out, man. Separate it. I don't want Trump involved in this. I don't want Manfred involved in this either, man. Like, baseball got their own problems. The Astros just cheated to a World Series, man. We don't need to be worried about the economy. We need to fix the sport itself.
You know, what's so funny is that it's so shady because Vince McMahon, who everybody knows, I'm like the president of Team Turnbuckle. I love wrestling unabashedly. You know, I've been a fan since I was 5. Yes, I know it's not real, but obviously if you're an adult, you understand like the nuances of it and the performance of it, and you try to look at that and all that. But I won't even get into that. But the level of corruption, the fact that they're a declared an essential business, they give a huge campaign donation to the governor of Florida. Then, before that, Linda was an ambassador somewhere, and then she left that job to run a super PAC for the Trump campaign reelection team, and the governor of Florida does everything he can to kiss Trump's ass at any time. Like, the level of corruption and cronyism and just outright, I don't give a fuck who knows that this is corruptness, is just unbelievable. And this is a business I support.
And remember what I said before we got on the show. I don't understand how Trump is such a bad hustler. It's almost disrespectful to the game, but somehow it still works. I don't understand. It's like he obvious.
He tells you what he's going to do before.
Yeah.
He does it. Like, he's like, I'm going to rob you. And then he robs you and nothing happens.
Yeah, you're just like, wait, what just happened? Did he really just do that? And then everybody's looking around like, yeah, but that's just Trump. I guess that's the way he's always gotten by people, like, that's just Trump. But I'm glad you mentioned the governor from Florida. I went back and watched some of his, like, campaign stuff after Trump got involved. It is the cheesiest. Oh, it's awful, man. It's so awful. And I just hope it was worth it to get that money. And honestly, I don't really know what else to say, man. Like, I just hope everybody is ready for the potential backlash of what could happen in this sense. Like, God forbid wrestlers actually get corona and it sweeps through WWE. They're going to have real issues. I mean, Florida's already having issues because of them not locking the state down when they could have shut the beaches down and things like that. So the governor's already got backlash on that. People are still freely coming and going in the state anyway. And then you're bringing in WWE entertainers and things like that. They fired some staff, so they're going to be probably less restrictive. It could turn bad, and I'm hoping that it doesn't, because people like WWE. You know, we got Team Turnbuckle in the group. They're pretty strong with it. We got a podcast that they do weekly talking about WrestleManias and things like that. And I think the athletes, because of their partnership with Fox and stuff like that, they're starting to become a tad bit more mainstream. There's some traction.
Yeah, they are.
And I would hate to see, it ruined because of one guy's greed.
Which, you know, that's kind of how it is. And it's just, and if you look at how, you can speak more to UFC, but with, and I know they don't, you know, they don't pay those fighters like they should with boxing. At least boxing, you're getting taken advantage of. You're getting compensated for it. But with WWE, these people are independent contractors, yet they can't work for anybody else. And he's getting away with that. You can't start a union. You can't, he doesn't really give them the kind of quality. Hell, and it's gotten better. But he takes advantage of these people. They're independent contractors, but they can't leave and go somewhere else. Like, so, I mean, The way he's taken advantage of his talent and hasn't changed until he was forced by countless deaths of his talent, you know, that's not the guy that should be on the the committee. Just no.
To talk about the economy, to talk about the little people like us. No, man. No, he don't care about us. He don't care about that stuff, but like I said, that's promoters, man, and you know that. You know, like you joked about Don King joining. Like he might as well. I mean, These are the people that Vince McMahon and Dana White, Don King, they're all the same snake, man, and they're gonna use and exploit people until they can't get a dollar out of you, and then they cut you off and go to the next one. And if you threaten them or write something bad about them, they're just gonna blame somebody else or smear you. So it is what it is. Like, I mean. Trump likes his celebrity friends. I also found it funny that I think he's in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he is, because he appeared at WrestleMania and hit Vince and all that.
They're friends,
little did
man.
I know that man would be the president. I mean, it's just so hard to believe on so many levels. What else is there to talk about? I figured we'd just come on here and just talk about whatever we felt like talking about. But is there anything else that you saw?
Yeah, I got something that I want to talk about. Let's talk about this Odell Beckham thing, bro. First of all, it was fake. I mean, honestly, even before I even decided to look to verify the source, a second and a fifth round for Odell Beckham sounds so ridiculous. And I know he hasn't been the most productive receiver, but the potential's there, and he ain't – like, he's still Odell Beckham. He's still, in most people's eyes, a top 10 wide receiver. Hey. You say what you want, man. Like,
is he still Odell Beckham? He had four touchdowns last year. Is he Odell Beckham still?
Yep.
He's always hurt.
Oh, okay. Hey, you know what's funny? I was about to say something real funny. I was about to say send him to New England, and then I remember Brady's not there.
He'd be so mad.
I'm so used to saying that.
Look,
man.
I was okay with Odell. I was okay with this Odell talk until Scooter Magruder, whatever the hell his name is, on Twitter, who does all the funny reaction videos to different events. I thought it was great. But for my team, to build a culture, to build a team with that, like, you can't – sometimes it's just team building. You cannot – like, it's okay for – I mean, I guess that's okay for Minnesota. That's fine or whatever. You replace one malcontent for another. And I don't want to dog Odell because he really did – he was on his best behavior last year. They had to zoom in to him whispering, come get me. But he didn't complain. He didn't throw Baker under the bus. Yes. But that is still Odell. That's a lot to deal with. And like I said on the page that I put on our social media things, he's a former aging 10 that's an 8. With no cooking, that's always got bound and low, with no cooking skills and two bad kids. I mean, I just don't, and maybe the sex is good, and I'm crossing my analogy, but I just don't want that in my life, man. You know, the Cowboys, where we at right now, we're too established and too okay. We just don't need
y'all
that in our lives.
Established,
right?
Man. Established what?
Man.
Y'all
we got a house and
year?
A nice car.
What do you have?
The credit
ain't
good. We got a lot of debt. We got a lot of debt. The credit ain't good. We got student loans. We're living above our means, but we're still established, and we don't need to add the extra drama and the credit card bills and her bad credit and all that kind of stuff and all that fuss.
Is he really that dramatic?
Discord in the house, man.
Like, people really painting this man like he got criminal charges or something. Like, he smacked that cop in the locker room on the butt. That's the worst he's actually ever done.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the worst he's actually ever done. Like, he had beef with Josh Norman, and he's never openly bad-mouthed the guys that he plays with. Like he could have super bashed Eli.
Stop,
he could have super bashed. He's been as nice to Eli as you could possibly be given the circumstances, bro. Come on, man.
You
think about how many diva receivers we know. How many diva receivers we know would have hauled off and probably tried to fight this man. Odell was as calm as he possibly could be given the circumstances, man. I think last year.
I'm just saying Dallas is not the
environment
for Odell.
Yeah.
It's just not the right environment.
Yeah, and
Do you ever think that Zeke and Odell should be on the same team or even in the same room together? Like, bad
things would be
happen.
So goofy, yo. They would be so goofy.
It would be the worst thing ever.
And let's be real. With the way Odell liked to play and some of the things Zeke done over the last couple of years, they're going to be suspect, bro. They're going to be suspect.
Yeah,
but
need that, man. We tried, Michael.
Do
Sam.
Work on skill. Man, Amari Cooper would be a legitimate wide receiver one if he had somebody like Odell Beckham to play alongside him to keep those like actual good cornerbacks off of him so he can really flex his muscle. He'd be great because Slay would cover Odell. And then you wouldn't have to worry about Cooper. We eat. I mean, who your wide receiver?
He can go to the Vikings. That's fine.
You ain't got one. You ain't really got one. I mean, let's be real. He don't show up when the real
DBs
show up.
Depends
on
who we playing. But he's a front runner. Depends on who we playing. If he got a good matchup, he the best. He the best receiver in the universe. He's Antonio Brown if he got the right matchup. But if he doesn't,
and then ultimately, like I was saying too. What are people talking about when they're talking about, like, Dallas don't need distractions? Dallas drafted a dude who was still technically under investigation for either attempting to kill his baby mama or something like that.
Come on, man.
They took a chance on Greg Hardy. Dad smacked his mom in a Walmart parking lot. You guys stood by him.
He was a person of interest.
You had
allegations.
Person of interest. Okay. We know what that terminology means. I bet he had a good settlement, too, when he got drafted. Yeah. Hey, I bet you're right. He was clear. No, soon they read his name in the seventh round or whenever he went, in the sixth or seventh round, because he was supposed to be a first-round pick. Yes, he was instantly clear.
That was tough.
Instantly clear.
That's tough. Your girlfriend died right before the draft, bro. That's
That
looks bad. You know, even if they went in a car accident, you'd be like, well, dang, man, this is tough. This is much less murder. But anyway, I forgot about that. Well, why add extra drama? Remember we had that running back that said there was meat left on the bone? It started with an R, like Randall or something, where Murray left and he was out there stealing panties and stealing underwear.
Yeah, stealing panties or something like that. And people out here talking about we don't need Odell Beckham because he smacked Josh Norman. Everybody wants to smack Josh Norman, bro.
Because
he ain't really that bad.
Because he twerked in the locker room, bro.
Yeah. They trying to make this man up and keep Miles Garrett. Get out of here, yo. I don't want to hear that nonsense. But, yeah, for a second and fifth, the Niners can go, do that. Sign me up. I'll take him. Shoot.
He's also, his salary is kind of high, too. I mean, I like Odell as the talent, but it's been a couple of years, and I know Baker – I mean, he should have made Baker better. I mean, maybe Baker is really just bad, and he was hurt. But like, he should have produced a lot more last year. That's like a no excuse year. You don't have Eli anymore. Like, you just gotta get it done, man. And I know a lot of it was Odell, but I mean, not, it was Baker. But God, you should be good enough to make it better.
The guy's only as good as the person throwing the ball, honestly. And I would equate that to when Randy went to Oakland. Randy Moss went to Oakland. It was awful. It was awful. And the minute he got back to a quarterback that had some sense, hell, he even did decent with the Niners. But, like, you gotta – like, no receiver can really overcome a piss-poor system and a piss-poor quarterback. You can do either or, but you can't do both. You just can't. Like, we looked at the Browns a lot last year, too much, honestly, for a team that was underachieving and just flat-out trash. And Baker was back there.
Yeah, they've been the biggest story the first 6 weeks.
Doing the 1-1000 and then taking off running to the right every single time. When he ran left, he couldn't throw. And then they kept lining Odell up on the left, so Odell would just run all the way across to the right. And then he went through his team because he's already stacked. And then they were running these three receiver combination plays where they sent everybody 15, 20 yards down the field on a three-step drop. It doesn't make any sense. What are we doing?
It was bad.
Free my man Odell Beckham. It's never too early to say that. Free Odell. I said it 16 times last year. I'm going to say it again.
If you get traded 2 times in a row, man, why would two teams want to trade you back-to-back years? Like, that, you just, there's something wrong with you. That's something
it's,
wrong with you.
It's Gettleman and the Browns. If there was ever a scenario where I would think somebody would get traded twice, it would be from the Giants to the Browns or from the Browns to somewhere else, anywhere else. Like, it's the Browns. They don't have a plan, man. They hired their coach before they hired their GM. Like, they don't have a plan. This is the organization that you got traded to from a dude who says that, what did he say, like, film don't matter or something stupid like that, Gettleman? Like, what? What?
Yeah, yeah, man.
Did you see his war room?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like a fucking study, man. You are GM for a multi-billion-dollar franchise. Why does it look like that? What are you doing, man? You out here getting your information on WikiLeaks.
That's pretty bad.
Now,
the other dude with the Chargers, 8 screens is a little bit overkill, but why do you have that much paperwork, bro? Like, your stuff should be on the computer. Why do you have all this paper? Like, is all your stuff on paper? Your scouting reports, are they literally, like, on paper? Like,
I owe John Gruden an apology. Because I clown John Gruden for using the projectors and the VHSs. But no, this is worse. This is where it's 2020. You still got your shit on paper. That's awful. That's awful, bro.
And so God forbid we actually
get to see what
he's writing. Does that mean you got to shuffle through that? Does that mean you got to shuffle through that when you're trying to make the picks? Do you have to, like, go through your stack of, like...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Sorry for Giants fans. It's embarrassing that what he's doing to that franchise. That's a legit franchise. And he is making them look like clowns. I can only imagine who he's going to pick. Like, how could he'll find a way to screw it up, I think. Chauncey Billups got a daggone. I think Chauncey Billups is, like, Skyping the horse thing and it's jumping. Like, the screen is literally jumping, like, on the bad moments when we do our Sunday night Sunday cast. Like, that's what Chauncey Billups' horse screen looks like right now, man. It's not funny. Like, this is me on TV.
Man, I want to also talk about Tristan Wirfs and let everybody know that I don't care what you say. In my unofficial expert opinion, dude's a guard. Please stop putting him as a tackle. Please stop putting him as the first offensive lineman off the board and putting him as an offensive tackle. It just ain't, both can't happen. If he's off the board first, he's a guard. If he's not off the board first, he's a tackle. I'll put it like that. There's no way they got this man, or some of the mocks I keep seeing from, like, fans have him way too high. And I'm like, have you looked at the other linemen? And it's not even about Becton. You don't even have to put Becton up there. But he's not better than Thomas. He's not better than Wills. He's not better than those two dudes, man. Like, it's just not.
Let me see if I can find.
You can't watch any film.
I don't see it.
And say he's better. Like, he's just not. So, like, stop putting him up there. It's killing me, man. And
this is what
another
Daniel
thing
Jeremiah
that I think
said. Let me read you Daniel Jeremiah's in his top 15. And he has him 13, but he has Becton and Willis.
Yeah.
Wills and I think he has one more guy in front of him. But he at least has Becton and Willis in front of him. And then the kid Thomas from Georgia. A lot of people have him. But let me say. And usually In Jeremiah's top 50, he says mostly positive stuff. But he kind of hit him. He says, However, he has experienced issues against inside counter moves. He oversets but struggles to redirect back inside, allowing too much pressure in the games I studied. When he can land his punches over, his hands are so strong, he has the power base to end the play right there. In the run game, he's very strong and aggressive. He creates tons of movement, but also will overextend and fall over on time at times. He's on the ground too much. I love his aggressive demeanor, but he needs to play under control. Overall, I believe he can survive at tackle, but he'll benefit from playing with neighbors on both sides. I think Wirf has all-pro guard, potentially guard.
Like his back, he's not – you got to be a dancing bear to play tackle.
Yeah.
Your balance
He's got a wrestling background, which kind of explains his love for basically going to the ground. But like the thing about what really turned me off of him as a tackle in the league was the aggression. Like, bro, tackles can't play like that, yo. And I think I had said to Chase off the record, like, yo, he reminds me of like a watered down version of Nelson. And Nelson's a guard, he's a killer, and he's great at it. But if you put Nelson at tackle, you're going to get 16 sacks a year off of just him alone because he's just that aggressive. Like, you can't, and especially playing tackle in this RPO league that we have now with some of these offenses, you can't be down the field, bro. It's a penalty every time.
Yeah. And like, tackle is just not cut out for it. In today's NFL, would drop back so much. Tackle is more of a passive position than guard, where you're constantly attacking, and you're pulling, and you're so happy when they run. And even when you drop back, you know, to pass as a guard, you're trying to protect the inside. You can be more aggressive. But as a tackle, you're basically trying to box the guy out. And you just can't play with kind of an over-aggression that he plays and be successful. And that's something that's going to be very difficult because that's his nature. And especially when he could be so good at guard. But when's the last time you saw a guard drafted in the first round besides the guy from
Nelson?
I don't know why I can't think of his name.
Quentin Nelson. And then it's like, yo, look, Conklin came in as a tackle on the right side. They ended up moving him to guard. It did great for his career. There's nothing wrong with that. And my rule of thumb from watching guys in the draft and things like that, if I see an offensive lineman who's plays a lot of tackle in college or who has played a lot of tackle in college, but his feet aren't necessarily that great, but he's got good hands, I automatically assume he's going to guard. It's just, I mean, that's basically what you are as a guard. Your feet not as good to be the tackle, but you got good hands. Hey, it's fine. But stop putting that man, as the first lineman off the board. You're going to get somebody fired. You want to talk about a bust?
If the Giants
about a bust. Yeah,
it's something the Gettleman to do. Take him at guard, at tackle, and just ruin
him. Put him in tackle. Bust. Stamp it. Bust.
Yeah, you're done. You're definitely done if you make that mistake. If you move into guard, like I said, you could have an All Pro or Pro Bowl. So it's up to them. But I'm not taking a guard at number 4, or even in the top 10. Maybe I would take him in the first round and hope he can play right tackle. And maybe buy time and move him in and all that, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm just not taking him as a top 5 pick, top 10 pick. Heck no.
Hey, since we're talking about the draft, though, let's go ahead and get this one out the way. Did I really see that a scout was mad that a 6'5", 360-pound tackle likes to cook and eat? Are you kidding me?
My boy.
Are you kidding? How do you think he got
best,
so big?
Sam Monson is like, at this point, the real scouts and really a scout's job is done at this point. But like, these scouts are so happy. These are like the old scouts that suck, that are just want to talk and have somebody listen to them. So these are the old crabby dudes that aren't good at their job, but they still like to run their mouth and get attention. It's got to be, because they're saying some wild
stuff.
It's
got to be, bro. Man, look, since it's your show, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't give a fuck how much a 360-pound lineman eats if he can move like Becton. If you watch this, you watch him run his 40, you watch him work at tackle, who cares? Who cares what he's eating? The dude can do like he's got a decent vertical, he's got good broad jump, like he's an athlete. He's an athlete. Athletes don't all come at 5'11", 185 pounds, chiseled muscle type stuff. Look at Aaron Donald. He's a big dude. He's an athlete too. He can move. Who cares, man? Who really cares? Like, that shit makes me so mad. And I remember I kind of had a spat with somebody in the group. It might have been Ashley Smith, but they said something about Becton and his weight, making sure his weight's under control. He's a lineman. What? I don't care if he comes in at 400 pounds. Like, if he can still move, I just need him to block. The bigger, the better, actually, especially at tackle. If you can't get around him and you can't go through him, then I think we've done a good job here. I think that's exactly what we want. What are y'all saying, man?
It isn't.
What are you really saying?
They're just hating, man. They're talking about, and Corey said it. There was the one in The Athletic where the guy was talking to a lot of scouts. Wonderlic for a receiver? I've never heard anybody even consider a Wonderlic for a receiver. What?
Yo,
why?
I didn't comment, man. I was like, I'm going to let it go, man. Like, Wonderlic. Frank Gore's Wonderlic said that all he could really do was tie his shoes, and he had a great career. So it's okay. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston's Wonderlic said he was a genius, and look at how that turned out for him. It just varies, man. Who cares?
And Dan Marino,
can you read the playbook?
Low too.
Can you read the playbook?
More about it for a quarterback than a daggone
receiver.
Receivers literally don't have to know anything but what they do, almost. Like, any position where it doesn't matter. And obviously there are some routes, you know, that are combo. But for the most part, you're just on this island and you got to do your job and wait for somebody to throw you the ball. It's not – you don't have to be a genius. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like it's not draft season until we see stuff like this, though. So you got to take the good with the bad.
And even some of the stuff about C.D. Lamb, you know, I was tripping a little bit. Having some fun with it, and you know, I still got him in like my top 20. It's not like I'm killing him, but the stuff they were saying about him, I've got what they were saying. They were saying some crazy stuff. I'm just like, y'all just are looking for anything. Like, now the Big 12 stuff we talked about, that's fair.
Yeah.
But you know, they're saying this man can't change direction and this and that. And I'm just like, wow, we just.
I don't know how critical I was of that, but I did say something along the lines of that I thought his like lateral movement was a little delayed in the sense of like his peers, like comparing him to the other guys. I thought it wasn't as quick, but he's also bigger than most of these receivers too. Like, he's not a small body receiver, so I mean, he still moves well. I had him as the NFL. My NFL comparison was Hopkins, and people were calling him Ocho Cinco. I mean, I thought I was closer.
I didn't think Robbie Anderson. They trying to hate on Robbie Anderson. They had a good career. Robbie, all right, man. I like Robbie. I could have been, but they're around the same size, and yeah, they're just long legged, striding. Gliding kind of dude, man. And
so, Robbie makes some tough catches.
You know,
he'll make some tough catches.
Yeah. So it's like, that's not a bad career. But obviously, if you're picking like at number 10 or 7 or something, I guess that's not what you're looking for. But honestly, the last 4 or 5 years of receivers out of like 18 people, Cowherd kept saying it, you got like 5 guys that are like good. And that's if you account Devontae Parker. And I put that list up a couple weeks ago, where you're not getting a lot of production out of that position. It's really just a crapshoot to take a receiver in the first round. And we've got so many prospects this year. It's kind of scary.
But I would say this, too. Like, I don't recall a class standing out as much as this class when the ball's in their hands. Like, the things that they can do after they make the catch. And like, that's the name of the game in today's NFL. Like, before, I think probably within the last like 5 or 6 years, that's been a gradual change to where people now want to get guys, obviously get the ball out as quick as possible, hasn't changed. But the way they do that and the route combinations they use and then the athletes that they're looking to get the ball to, there's not a lot of possession guys anymore. Like Treadwell, when he came out, you just kind of had this feeling like that wasn't going to work. Like, he's just a big guy. Like, those guys don't find success in the league anymore because you're running 5-yard routes. But if you're only getting 5 yards on that 5-yard route, then there's nothing for you because there's guys out here that can get that 5-yard catch and turn it to 10 or 15 in a blink of an eye. And those are the guys that are finding success as wide receiver ones now. And I think this class has a lot of guys with that type of ability. Now, whether they actually do that at the next level is you know, yet to be determined. But I think people being high on this class, it's fair considering what they all shown that they can do with the ball in their hand.
And I agree. There's a lot. I mean, even guys like Duvernay from Texas coming in the slot is fast and nasty. And, like, there's just guys all over the place that can either – they're big and they box you out and go up and get it. Like the kid from Baylor, like Higgins, the kid from Liberty, and Pittman is pretty big too. So you got that. You got the kid from Ragard, the guy from TCU that's small and can run. You got your boy Hamler. Like, you just got all kinds of receivers. And so that part is pretty cool. But so I do think it's a class that is that deserves the hype that has gotten. I do agree with that. But receiver is a very hard position to adjust to, especially when these guys don't face a lot of press. And like Denzel Mims, the kid from Baylor, they're not even running routes. So that part of it is kind of, you know, you run fades and comebacks and streaks. Like, that's a big adjustment. And you don't face press coverage. That's a big adjustment. So that part of it is a crapshoot.
Yeah. It's always going to be a lot of questions, you know, when you take guys. But I think the people that you could make an argument for to go in the first round this year and look to be future wide receiver ones, it's as solid as you're going to get. If it doesn't work out, it's either not meant to be or you just got a bad organization or coach at the helm. There's a lot of talent in this group.
I just think that. I do think that there's a lot of talent. So, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. What else is there? There's something else. I feel like
what else is there? Are you kidding me, man? What else is there? NASCAR is in the freaking news. NASCAR is in the news. Believe it or not, NASCAR is in the news because somebody went on. You know what? I can't even say somebody. I'm gonna make sure I get this man's name right. And I just want to. All right, Kyle Larson. There we go. Kyle Larson. Wait, no. Yeah, Bubba Wallace to Kyle Larson. I forgive you for the N-word incident. Okay, so the one black guy in NASCAR forgives Kyle Larson, so that makes it fair. All right, listen to this, man. Kyle Larson, how old is Kyle Larson? Let's see. Kyle Larson is... Kyle Larson is 27 years old. He was born in 1992. Why is he on the internet saying the N-word as if he doesn't realize that the whole world is watching this stream? Like, you too young to make that mistake. No, if Tony Stewart and Jeff Gordon made that mistake, if they made that mistake, it's fine because they're like 60 years old and they probably don't understand how this thing works. You're 27, bro. You grew up with this. Come on, man.
I'm talking about my boy Jeff Gordon. He's not a redneck. Jeff Gordon is from California, but I know what you're saying.
It was the hard R too, yo. It wasn't the term of endearment either. It was like, yeah, boy, you know, it has some twang to it too. Like, hey, as natural as he could be, and then I forgot. The reactions were even funnier by the people around. They were like, oh gosh, did he really say that? Oh, wow, I just thought that was funny. But look, it's too many people defending this nonsense, man. And it's too many people being like, well, they say it in the music.
Like,
dear white people, I should not have to tell you, can't say this. You can't. Dear America, I shouldn't have to tell you that you can't say this if you're not a rapper or entertainer. You can't. I'm sorry. I don't make the rules. I don't know why it's like that, but that's how it is. If you want to say it, sing it. There you go. Just put it in the lyric. He should have sang it. He should have been singing, like, you know, where is my, and then drop it in.
You're going to get in trouble. Unless you're Hispanic, unless you're an Hispanic woman, you're going to get in trouble. Like, you can't. Like, I don't want to get, it's too hard of a time.
with everything going on in America to have a serious discussion about race. But if you don't understand why a white person can't say it and a black person can't, like, I don't know. But it's amazing that there are so few double standards that favor black people in America. And that few double standards that there are, white people go crazy over it. And you, it's not going to be a double standard because you can look at, like, the historical context, but the appearance of a double standard, they go crazy because a black person can say you can't. Well, you can drive down the street without harassment, and I can't. There's a whole bunch. You can get medical care at a better rate than I can. You really want to trade off a word for systematic oppression and systematic racism? I don't think you really do.
I mean, everybody wants to experience something. They want to feel like they belong. I said this to somebody the other day. I was like, I don't understand why you guys want to experience this. Why would you want to like be an equal to like racism and oppression or any type of negative like aspects? Like, why would you want to experience that to be like, see, I go through it too. Like, what? That's not what this is about, man. And I mean, without getting, like, you know, too political and too, like, into it, at the end of the day, the dude represents other companies. He represents NASCAR. Now, let's go ahead and say it. NASCAR fan base, by and large, doesn't care about this, obviously. but sponsors do. Your sponsors do. Your team does. And then, like, you know, you got a fellow African-American, or I think he's half black, half white. Doesn't really matter. He identifies as black. He's obviously offended by it, and I hate when these things happen and the one black person comes out and they're like, well, I forgive him. Like, who cares, man? Like, I don't care if you
it's
forgive
like
him. That's part of the problem too.
Black people.
Yeah, like you can't say it, bro.
Like, honestly, and this is not a great opinion, but I guess, but like, I just can't get worked up every time somebody says the N-word, man. Like, God,
oh, no,
like, okay, make
up,
him apologize, fine him, can we suspend him? But, like, I don't need him to – I don't need everybody that ever says the N-word to be fired. I don't know. It's 2020. Like, I don't know. I know a lot of black people might not like that. But, like people – white people are racist. Newsflash. You know, like, it's not going to make me feel better because that man lost his sponsorship and got fired or whatever. Like, I don't know, release a statement, make him apologize, because nobody, it doesn't change what we saw on that Facebook page. It's not, It doesn't do anything. It makes you feel better for a second, but I guarantee you he's going to work again. He just got to do this little mea culpa, and then he'll be back in the saddle after he's been publicly flawed long enough. I don't know, man. I just don't care. Like, I didn't know who he was. I'm not offended because I don't know who you are. And most people that watch NASCAR know who he is and don't care. So I'm just like, it is what it is, man. You do now, Riley
Cooper.
Oh my God. That's different. I knew who Riley Cooper was. You know, he should have been bad.
Like,
he got to play, actually. He got to play. So, you know.
We need to get off this quarantine. We need people back out in the streets, because I just saw somebody on Facebook say Jordan would average 32 in this era. And we really got
it.
We really
got
it.
It wasn't in our group, was it? No,
it
would be so easy for Jordan in this era. But anyway,
it's on a member of our group's like personal page. Like, he didn't say it. Like, somebody, like one of his friends said it. But I definitely looked to make sure it wasn't in our group. I was just going
to
remove that person.
Tell him to watch the documentary. Tell the dude to watch the documentary. That's the dumbest thing. I don't want to defend Jordan. I spent my whole life, childhood, rooting against Jordan. That's how I know how good he was, because I wanted him to lose every time. It broke my heart every single time. It was devastating.
Harding gets 32 in this era, shooting 2-for-16. From the 3-point line. I'm pretty sure my man Jordan could get 32.
Yeah, I think Jordan could get 32.
He probably
I don't know how a person could.
He goes too. And he would make most of them.
I don't know how a person could do that. And what if he started trying to abuse the rules like these dudes do? Like, he wasn't a big flopper or anything like that. But if he wanted to try to abuse the rules and get the foul and do what they did, or start shooting three-pointers, man, that's a wrap. That's 35, 36, 37 a game. Easily.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of these nostalgic guys that always dogs the new generation. Like, a lot of guys from the old generation couldn't play in the 80s and 90s. And 90s is like one of the worst decades, and not even that skill. But, no, you don't come for Jordan. That's just ignorant.
He could score, man. I don't know what more people want. But, yeah, like, I didn't mean to get off topic from the N-word. But I'll
wait,
you, man.
Was it Ronnell? Was it Ronnell that said that somebody said Jordan couldn't score? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. He said – I think he said he said he heard it or he hears it a lot or something like that. And we were like, where? And he was like, well, you guys need to get out more. And I'm like, no, you need to stop going to where you're going to hear these things.
I don't know what barbershop you're going to, but you need to stop. Like, wherever, if anybody's saying, like, that's the defining trait of Jordan is scoring. He averages more points than anybody in the history of the NBA. So if somebody says he couldn't score, that's somebody that doesn't watch a lot of basketball or doesn't understand
I don't even think Spike would say that. Byron Russell would say that, but I don't think Spike would say that. Russell would say he pushed him, which he probably did, but you already
hit
it in that
direction.
Like, he was headed in that direction anyway. If anything, he was a kind soul that gave you an excuse to be like, oh, if he'd have never touched him, then it would have counted as a cross up, and it would have looked even worse. But because he gave you the little guiding hand to your right or left or whatever, I think it was fine.
Is that what you're calling that?
Man, he didn't
little
push,
guiding
push.
Hand.
He didn't push.
A big push off. But that's what. And he slapped Karl Malone's hand. Don't get me started. He smacked Karl Malone's arm to play for that to get the ball back, and nobody called it. I'm like, really? This dude,
Karl Malone, man, shut your ass up. Big country pumpkin. He probably was like, they didn't understand what he was saying. Karl Malone, hey, look, man,
if
I'm not trying to get on top of you. Karl Malone, he's not a good
person. If he gets stopped
in
the talk for this documentary,
I would
be very impressed.
I try not to talk Karl Malone. He's not a good person. He's not, man. I think
no, he's not.
The story
there's
came
stuff
out, man,
going
I
on in Karl Malone's life.
Yeah, I just can't, man. And me being a fellow country bumpkin myself, I can't condone that activity either. Like, oh, that's just what they did. Like, nah. Maybe down in the backwoods. Like Southern country is different from our country. So them Georgia area, Louisiana swamps and things like that, they're a little different back.
Yeah, the Deep South is like scarier than Virginia. Like, the Deep South, there's a lot going on in the Deep South. So, yeah, I know. But
yeah,
I think we covered everything. Any last parting shots before we go?
Yes. Shout out to my man Trump for being progressive and getting the WNBA commissioner in on these talks about restoring sports America. Yeah, she is on the committee, bro. I was there clapping.
I'm proud of Trump.
Bro.
I'm proud.
Yeah.
I'm
hey,
proud.
And
right
shout out to my PGA coming back in June. About to get this money. Can't wait. Nah, they coming back, man.
Those
sponsors.
They definitely don't need a crowd. They don't need a crowd.
But, I mean, think,
so why
think about it. Golf sponsors only get seen when golf is in. So, you know they pushing.
Yeah.
They pushing. FedEx
gets
it with you.
What do you think, Czar, of us having sports in the summer and fall and winter? And what do you think it looks like?
Man, I really think that if we don't have a set like vaccination or cure, that we're not gonna have fans in the stadiums or arenas until 2021. I really think that for sure. I think it would be a disservice to the public if people gathered without some form of like like medicine, you know, or vaccine or something. Like,
yeah.
The way, I mean, I'm not a scientist, and I think, obviously, you know, not speaking on your part, but me personally, I know a lot of people who've been affected by it. So it's real, even regardless of what these people on the internet might think and things like that. But from friends to coworkers to extended family, I know people who've dealt with it, and it's an unpredictable virus. And because of that, I think like the commissioners and the athletes and you know, they got their families that come to the games and things like that, all that taken into consideration, I don't think anybody would be comfortable with gathering for sporting events without some form of a vaccine in place, especially the athletes. I mean, we're seeing NFL players get affected now, which it was bound to happen anyway. But like the Von Miller situation is a little scary because he's got asthma and it's a respiratory disease. So, you know, at some point, I think people are going to be like, you know, let's hold off. We can do this without the crowds and things like that. And it should be more manageable. So I'm looking at 2021 before anybody can do
it. You know, one of the most depressing things we're ever going to see in our lives will be college football without a crowd. The atmosphere of college football is what makes college football. It's going to be really depressing. And all that stuff I always complain about some of the poor play, inconsistent play that is exciting, it's not going to be fun without the crowd. I'm telling you. And the band and the pageantry and all of that stuff, it ain't going to be the same. I'm telling you.
It will definitely sway some of my votes for sure. But, hey, we finally get to see if Michigan is better than Ohio State, because without fans, it's just a neutral site game, basically. So we're going to see what's up. I got no excuses
this year. They are not. Let me assure you, they are not. They don't recruit as well, and they don't develop their players as well. So it's going to be an ugly little thing. That's all I can say. It's going to continue to be ugly. But yeah, I think we're going to see the NFL, even if we have to see the NFL in December. We're going to see the NFL. I think it's unlikely we would see college because they always have that built-in thing where, like, look, you can't put these kids in jeopardy. And, like, they always take advantage of them, but it can't be this obvious how much they take advantage of them. I can see golf coming back. I don't think the NBA – I don't think that quarantining people – in a hotel and in a city will work because you got to shut it down for a little while and test more people. And these players are going to want to party. They're going to want to find women. Like, they're not going to stay in this little quarantine island that you want. I just don't think that's realistic.
Well, I mean, you got to protect the NBA players at all costs. I mean, they were sharing stuff before Corona, so you definitely don't want to take that chance.
And what is
like,
I'm never gonna
let that go. That January, or was it? Yeah, January of this year or December, January of this year. How many of these random sickness were game time decisions, man? Like, come on now, nah, man. Cats was going to certain cities and getting sick. Mm-hmm. I don't see.
Maybe. I mean, baseball, I don't know. Maybe they could pull it off. But also, what kind of play are you going to get? Jason Tatum says he hasn't touched the ball. Giannis says he doesn't have a court at his house. Like, I remember when the lockout came, and then they came back to Sean Kemp and Vin Baker, who these very athletic, bigger guys had just blown up. And that, like, mm-hmm. Do we really want to see the Celtics with the Jason Tatum that has played in 2 months? And do we really want to see a Giannis that might have blown up a little bit? Or LeBron, who basically thrives on playing games?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's a lot.
I think ultimately, too, it's got to be on the public as well, man. Like, people just got to be smart about this. You just got to be smart. And I guess with that being said, and me thinking about the general public, I should just take that back. They're not smart. Never mind. Forget what I was about to say. Hopefully, the commissioners and the players' unions do the right thing and figure out something that works for the players, for their compensation of their risk and playing, and then also for the fans to still, like, you know, get an experience, whether it be through the TV or something else. But getting together with 60,000 people, or, like, you know, we're talking college football, they got 80,000, like, people in the stadium and things like that. They're tailgating, and nah, we ain't gonna see much of that this year. Just might as well cancel it. It's all right. I still watch my 12 a.m. Hawaii games. It's fine.
All right.
I've been watching horse
we've
racing.
Covered it all. We went
I was gonna
we
say, I've been watching horse racing.
What kind of horse racing, sir?
I've been watching horse racing, and they kind of had the blueprint of, like, you know, the fanless experiences and things like that. So, I mean, they've been talking about it on the TVG stations and stuff about how commissioners have reached out to some of the organizers who are running these parks still, on how they've maintained, like, you know, safety and things like that, keeping people from exposure and so forth and so on. So, I mean, there's definitely talk about it for sure. But, yeah, go ahead and close it
and
out.
And good old Vince has been going crowdless since it's so – he's been doing shows the whole time. No stop. Like, they taped episodes, they taped some of WrestleMania, and they taped a couple episodes back down. But then this week they went right back to live. Like, it's not going to stop. This man didn't stop the show when a man fell from the rafters to his death and died, and they continued the show. Like, it's just ruthless, man. It's really awful. Mm. That's why I never fucked with Vince, man. I always was an NWA, WCW guy. Like, I just never really dealt with him. He's just the only one that was around, man. It's just... it's terrible.
I agree. He's not a good person.
All right, y'all. Till next time, rate and subscribe and review.